All in preparation for the challenges that lie ahead. This is a show that feeds the mind with inspiration and truth on the issues of the day. If it's important to your life, you'll find it here. Hosted by Malcolm Out Loud.
Well, the question I have for you this afternoon is, are we prepared for a catastrophic event on the streets of America? Well, you don't hear much about this in the mainstream media. In fact, you don't hear about much of this anywhere. We've become a very reactive society, not a proactive. We're going to talk about that today on the show. This is Real Life. It's Malcolm Out Loud here. Welcome to the show. We are definitely going to be on the brink this afternoon. Talk about a lot of different scenarios and possibilities and try to educate all of us a little bit about what some of the dangers are out there. Not to so much be alarmed, but again, to be prepared. I believe we need to be proactive. Joining us on the show today will be Colonel Jim Warshuk. Colonel Warshuk is a retired U.S. Air Force Colonel, 30-year career senior intelligence officer, and he will definitely have a perspective on this conversation. I look forward to having it. And as I told him prior in our pre-conversation, this is something that the media is not talking a lot about. He agrees with that. And I look forward to hearing what he has to say on some of the potential problems that could change everything, friends. Well, again, this is Real Life, and follow us on Twitter at Malcolm Out Loud. You'll find a whole lot there. Hashtag Malcolm Out Loud, too. I save a lot of documents and things we discuss, show notes on the show, right on hashtag Malcolm Out Loud. So follow us there as well. Well, we're all caught up in this, a couple of things. The general election, sure, big conversation, big deal. I mean, we're going to elect the most important leader in the world, and it's a big moment. Sure, we talk a lot about terrorism. That's a big conversation, and it's become a big part of our vocabulary today. And that's really where the news is centered, I find, anyways, on politics, general election, and on the possibility of terrorism. But there are other things that we need to be concerned with. I do not believe that the next problem we're going to have in this country is going to happen at the airport. I don't see that happening with one of these airliners. And let me be clear, there's only so much damage, and I'm not trying to play that down when you talk about a plane or two, and I get it. But there are a lot worse things that could happen, my friends. And I think I kind of look at the airport sort of thing as a Trojan horse, I might say. Why we're asphyxiated on this so much over there, airport security and all of the aspects that, the pieces that go with that. Well, I think the bad cats out there are looking at a whole lot of other things. And I've said repeatedly, actually, in these last few years, what about our ports? Who's watching the ports? It's a lot of chemicals and things at our ports that could create a whole lot of problems in our cities and towns on our shores. Who's watching that? Who's watching our water supply? What about the electrical grid? What about these kinds of things? We talk about our infrastructure all the time, but nothing ever changes. Nothing happens. Part of the problem is, what I find, we're very reactive. We're not proactive. Being proactive requires a bit of courage and backbone, something that politicians typically lack. I mean, politicians, they're looking for a quick payoff. They're looking for a quick vote. They want something that's going to give them an immediate reaction because it's where the power is. If they're going to get your vote, they just want to make you feel good at the moment. So you're never really getting the truth from the political establishment ever. Never. And they keep so much from us anyways. There's things they don't want you to know. On top of that, let's face it, it's not the media's friend either. The media, they're just total reactive. There's nothing proactive about the media. Example, what I tell you all the time on this show, the media never talks about good news. And I'm going to tell you right now, there is a lot of good news happening out there. Across this great country, any given day, there are great Americans doing great things. Things I cover with you all the time on this show. Yet, things you'll never hear in the media out there. You don't get a whiff of it because it doesn't sell, they think. Well, I beg to differ. I think we need to celebrate the good things. We need to celebrate the good people. That's why I created the Brink of Greatness. You go to brinkofgreatness.com. Look at the Brink wall there. Look at all the people I celebrate, people I'm proud to put on there. You take a look at the life lessons and the tools. You'll get the picture of what I'm talking about real quickly. But you don't get that in the media today. Same thing when it comes to our big problems. Things I talk to you all the time about on this production. Okay, things that I think need to be addressed. And things that require some forethought and really looking and circling the problems and understanding what the real issues are today. You know, one of my dreams is to create a national think tank. Now, I'm not talking a pro-right or pro-left think tank, not a political think tank. I'm talking about an American think tank of real thinkers, innovators, inspirers, people who can come together to solve the big problems of the day. Yeah. I mean, I look at this as kind of sort of a whiteboard exercise with very unique people. Take one of our problems on, solve it, and send the findings of that. Publish them in a business journal, publication, make them public. Send them off to the White House. Send them to some of the governor's offices that they impact. And, you know, let's solve some of the big problems. Yeah, I don't think we leave all this up to government, friends. I think many of us have to get in play here and do something about these problems. So, you know, again, we can take some of these issues on and be more proactive. You know, when it comes to the media is looking to be reactive. So you're not being engaged in the media, whether it's television or radio or print or internet. You're not really being engaged on some of the issues. So today on the show, when we talk to Colonel Warshak, I'm going to ask him some of the tough questions. I don't suspect we'll agree on everything, although I like the colonel. I like what he has to say on a lot of things. I think he makes it, you know, I love our military leaders, actually. I think we have some of the best human beings ever that serve our great country, and they happen to be wearing military uniforms. I love our military. I just think the sacrifices and what they've done with our country is spectacular. But my friends, we have to be diligent. Today, in the computer technology, things have totally changed. You don't need an army anymore to take something down. You don't need anything close to an army, I'm telling you right now. You can do it with cyber attacks. The harm can be caused and the pain and the suffering is unimaginable. Well, that's the topic. Those are the things we're going to take on today. This is Real Life. We're definitely going to get to the brink today. Looking forward to Colonel Warshak. We're going to take all this up and stay with us. We got a very exciting show. We'll be right back with you just after a quick pause. Well, it is not difficult to imagine a scenario where the global media is buzzing with reports of the United States military systems under relentless electronic assault from computers in the Middle East. An unknown adversary controls military logistics, transportation, and administration systems that are essential to deploying troops to the Persian Gulf. Many of the largest U.S. commercial websites are flooded with connection requests, paralyzing significant portions of the internet. Deadly viruses begin to infect computers around the world, including many military systems. More than 60 million computers are affected, costing billions of dollars. Well, welcome back. This is Real Life, and I hope what I just read to you doesn't ever become real life, but we are on the brink this afternoon. It's Malcolm Out Loud here. So what I read to you now, as I start to study more and more of this, there are so many scenarios and possible situations that could impact our infrastructure, impact our way of life and how we know it. And, you know, it appears to me, although I've been beating the drum and talking about this for some time, I don't hear a lot about this. Very seldom do you see a good report on this. Very seldom is something ever said about this. There are reasons why that's happening, but that's the topic today I want to talk about with you. And I want to bring on, introduce to you now, Colonel Jim Warshak. He's a 30-year career senior intelligence officer, retired U.S. Air Force colonel, held positions on the White House National Security Staff, headquarters U.S. Central Command, served in Grenada, Panama, Bosnia, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And so, Colonel Warshak, I want to start here. There's so much we take for granted in our country that, you know, we're fortunate, we're blessed in many ways. But you think about it, we get up in the morning, we turn on the water, hopefully the water works, the electricity works, our phones work, our ability to communicate through the internet, through social media. and even the mainstream media, turning on a television, a radio, something like that. What happens if any of these go down for an extended period of time in America? What's the risk factor here, please?
Well, good to be with you, Malcolm. Of course, the first thing we see is panic. People start to become concerned of what's going on, and depending on how long that goes on, they begin to question certainly their local government and their officials as far as providing the services that they are so accustomed to on a daily basis, as you said, of course.
Right. I mean, and that's only the start of it, isn't it? I mean, it can go pretty deep. And I mean, this thing, we're dealing with a big problem here. I mean, you know, and I've kind of, you know, for years now, since the 9/11 debacle, Colonel, I have mentioned always that, you know, I don't know, there's just something ironic to me. I see our public officials and I see other people like focused and pointing at the airport, like that's the big deal. And, you know, I think while everybody's looking at the airport, because that's a known factor now, I think it's not going to happen at the airport. I think it's happening somewhere else.
Well, you're right. I think it's going to become apparent that the terrorists or other adversaries out there that are planning and scheming to conduct some type of public display, be it an attack, a bombing, whatever. They're looking at other areas that are less vulnerable. Airports, despite the questioning we see from the TSA and others, they're still pretty secure, but there are so many other areas that are much more vulnerable and would have greater certainly a greater impact than an airport. And, you know, the airport is just a facility. You know, we continue to focus on it's going to be on an airliner. And certainly terrorists continue to focus on that as one of the areas. But as we saw in Paris, as we saw in San Bernardino, just about any place on any given day is a target of vulnerability.
It is, yeah. I look at the airport and the whole plane deal as sort of the Trojan horse. I think while we're focused on that, I mean, you could do, listen, I mean, you're limited. I mean, not to be a wise guy here, but there are limitations to what you can do with a plane or two. We've seen that. I mean, you're not going to stop the whole world, but there are other things you can do which would stop a lot of the world. And so I think it's sort of a Trojan horse is what I see. I think a lot of people are paying attention this and really ignoring many other factors or not really focused on it. And I'm really concerned with something here. I want to read you something here that this was a report in just last December here, so just a bit ago here, and it was from the Associated Press, and it was about the U.S. power grid, the vulnerability to foreign hacks. Let me just work through this a minute with you, and I want to tell folks about this. And I'm reading right from the report now. Security researcher Brian Wallace was on the trail of hackers who had snatched a California university's housing files when he stumbled into a larger nightmare. Cyber attackers had opened a pathway into the networks running the United States power grid. Well, digital clues pointed to Iranian hackers, and Wallace found that they had already taken passwords as well as engineering drawings of dozens of power plants, at least one with the title Mission Control. Well, the drawings were so detailed that experts say skilled attackers could have used them, along with other tools and malicious code, to knock out electricity flowing to millions and millions of homes. Well, they were astonished, Colonel, and it was not unique, though, they said. About a dozen times in the last decade, from the research I've done here in the last day or so, sophisticated foreign hackers have gained enough remote access to control the operations networks that keep the lights on for us. And experts say that, you know, and they're being very hush-hush about this now, very sensitive nature, so they don't want this stuff to leak out. And, you know, the public almost never hears this information. The government doesn't want this out there, they're saying. In 2012 and 2013, some of the more publicized attacks, Russian hackers sent and received, they were very successful at sending encrypted commands to the U.S. public utilities and power generators. And part of the problem is a lot of these are owned by private firms. They're outdated systems, okay? They're owned by private firms. They're not even owned by, you know, the government has very limited control. There's a lot I didn't understand about that, but do you know that to all to be true, or do you have something different?
Well, I've seen and heard, and you know, we when I served in the military, would always look at, you know, across the board, the type of attacks that may take place, and it's power grids, it's the banking electronic networks, it's the water supply, all of which nowadays are, one, tied to the electronic power grid because they require power, but they're all tied to the sophisticated computer network. So the hubs of computer networks that we use across the country are certainly just as vulnerable. And like you said, they are all run and maintained by private companies. The only involvement the government really has with them is, depending on the different degree and levels of regulation that are required.
Exactly.
For safety and security of the public, but they're responsible for maintaining the security. We would hope that they fully understand that and do the best we can, and they do the best they can to maintain that security. But, you know, we just saw in the last couple weeks, there were several, I would call them would-be terrorists, who were apprehended and arrested in upstate New York, who were looking at a dam and how to either do something to break it, destroy it, or create some form of havoc with it. And then we also saw the Iranians were also looking at similar dams in New York.
Right. Yeah, I've seen those reports.
And so, I mean, there it's not just terrorist groups, but, you know, there are governments.
Exactly.
Russia, China, who, for some reason or another, see it as there may be vulnerabilities that they can capitalize on for whatever economic or other reasons that they want to. So, I mean, we are not just dealing with terrorists. We are also dealing with rogue governments like Iran, North Korea, and even legitimate governments.
Excellent point.
Like
Excellent
Russia point. And China, who have perhaps some reason down the road someday to do something. So
we are
very vulnerable.
Point. Yeah. You know, as I pause here a moment in just a sec here, you bring up a great, great point about this. And some of these people are just malicious hackers. They do it for the entertainment factor, Colonel, let alone foreign governments and terrorists. I mean, there are people who do this just for the kick of it. So there's a lot to this. And we're going to pick this up right again on the other side of this quick pause here. We're speaking to Colonel Jim Warshak. This is Real Life. We'll be right back with you. We are back with you here. We're speaking with Colonel Jim Warshak, and this is Real Life. And, you know, I'm giving you a lot of scenarios here, a lot to chew on this afternoon on this situation. But this is something I've been following, folks, and I think it's not to scare you, but this is to give you some reality of, you know, what's really happening out there. You know, I think all too often, I think we wait till something bad happens, and I think our leaders do that. And I think there's a mode here to me and with you that we need to get engaged in this process, and we need to force our leadership to pay attention to these areas and do something about it. You know, I was just sharing with you about the electrical grids with Colonel Warshak before the break. And, you know, again, from everything I see here, the grid is, for the most part, largely privately owned. And a lot of these sections in there fall totally outside federal regulation, okay? Now, experts argue that, you know, this is a very poorly defended industry, and that, you know, there's, a growing universe of these criminally minded people and hackers. And as we just said before the break, as Colonel said, I mean, for a lot of reasons they do this. Yeah, terrorism. terrorists are one thing, rogue governments are another, just malicious hackers who do it for entertaining mint purposes. This is another part of it. So you've got a lot of different paths of possibilities here. You know the other thing, Colonel? A lot of these older systems are older, and what they've done is they are kind of ancient, some of them. They're not up to date, and they put these new computer systems on them, but the systems themselves are still outdated. They haven't spent the money. They haven't kept them up. I mean, hell, just look at our, I mean, you don't have to be a wizard to figure this out, Colonel. I mean, just look at our roads, our bridges, and our basic infrastructure. You can see that with the naked eye, but you start to get into the intricacies of these other things and what makes our country great and our system and things we take for granted. I'm really, really worried about this, and I think we're going to have some problems ahead. There's a lot of kinks in the armor here, aren't there?
There sure are. One other area is, and again, another example, we saw this last week, the concern over the old gas lines under the streets in many cities that are starting to decay and break up. Who's to say that these, I'll call them rogue hackers, rogue terrorists, whatever, will not capitalize or try to do something, getting into the computer network of that to cause a pressure buildup, which would eventually turn into an explosion and, you know, wipe out a whole city block.
Well, that's
they're smart people, and with some research, they are coming up with scenarios that we've never dreamed of happening, and again, like you said, they're doing it for their own entertainment and their own fun, but it's serious, and I would hope that our officials working alongside our private sector, municipalities and companies that run these, take these into consideration, because I think we're going to see more in the future rather than less.
I think we can only provide
so much security.
Yeah. Here's the thing. When it comes to cyberspace, I often say, Colonel, you know, the age of the computer and the age of sophistication that, you know, we have in this country, we consider it, sure, it's a bonus, it's a plus, it's information, it's intelligence. Got it. But with that comes a lot of responsibility and a lot of risk. And the facts of the matter are that massive results can happen here and can be achieved without massing forces. And that's what it is about cyberspace. You don't necessarily need an army. I mean, you can do more damage through cyberspace with just a few hackers in a room. But hell, that would take, a massive army to conduct. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a group not too long ago, and I said, has anybody thought of, again, not only terrorists, but just hackers looking for some Saturday night entertainment?
Right.
We're getting all excited about driverless cars. Can you imagine what they could do with driverless cars?
I've just been talking about that on the show. Believe it or not, it's funny you mentioned that. I don't even know that you know that, but I've just been talking about it.
Is that a new weapon system or a delivery vehicle for a weapon system? Again, the scenarios are endless.
You mentioned driverless cars, and I hadn't even thought through that, Colonel, as you just have. But you know what I have thought through of? A lot of this talk we've been having in the last many days about drones again.
Exactly. The same thing.
The commercialization of drones is incredible, and I see that's another real weakness that is going to come back. They're already planning things. They're already working with them. They're already doing all these things, Colonel. This is not just a what if. It's a when.
Right.
It's a when.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what you've got here. So a lot of these things we're talking about today are entirely plausible, and they're very, very plausible. And so, you know, what do we do at this moment? I mean, what are some of the things you as a military officer and the things you've seen over the years, is this just a matter of time to play out now and we've got to brace ourselves? And we see a lot of, we've become very vulnerable very quickly. This nation has. What do you think some of the steps are that we can take, Colonel?
Well, certainly the first thing we need to do is get radical Islam under control. And that's the closest thing that I've been dealing with over the last number of years. We've got to come up with a coherent, strategic, focused strategy to deal with that, and unfortunately, we continue to debate it and still do nothing. And I think that is the single largest priority that we need to deal with, because it's just starting, it's just wreaking havoc across the world. It's not just in the Middle East now. What we're seeing in Europe with the refugee situation and the debate right now of whether we're going to allow that to happen in the United States is certainly a critical consideration. We still have Putin in Russia, who he plans on being there forever. He is in a hurting situation now because of the continued drop in oil prices, and he's desperate for hard currency. Despite what most people believe, he is not in the best situation. So when you deal with someone like that, who's got a lot of pressure on him, who knows what's going to happen? We've got to deal with North Korea, who claims to have a hydrogen bomb now, and we've got the new opportunities for Iran to do what they want to do with their development of a nuclear weapon. We are entering into a very dangerous world and a more vulnerable world than we've seen in a long time.
We are. I want to talk to you next. I have, you know, and we may not agree on this, what I want to talk to you about, but Russia, I know you, I mean, you're, again, as a military officer, you've seen a lot more out there than I have, clearly, and you understand the paradigm here that we're in. But Russia is a very unique conversation, I think, that I do want to discuss with you. I'm going to ask you to hang with me a few more minutes, if you can, Colonel, because I want to cover a couple of other big points with you. We're speaking to Colonel Jim Warshuk again, retired U.S. Air Force. It's always good to get his perspective on things. I there's some other things I must ask him why we have him here today with us, folks. Again, this is Real Lives, Malcolm Out Loud. We'll take a quick pause. We'll be right back with you. Hey, we are back with you this afternoon. This is Real Life. It's Malcolm Out Loud. Welcome back to the show. Again, folks, you can go to our Twitter feed, at Malcolm Out Loud. You'll find us there and follow us there. But also, hashtag Malcolm Out Loud. You get a whole lot on there. A lot of the documents and the items I talk about on the show, we put right up there on Twitter. So feel free to check that all out. Always talking about great stuff. I'm certainly, as you know, a news and political junkie, so I'm on all of it all the time. But, you know, again, we're covering all the things that matter to you, and I think this is a conversation I don't see a lot of people out there having the conversation I'm having today with you all. I just don't see it, okay? You know what it is with our media folks? I find they're very, very reactive, very, very reactive, and sometimes overreactive, but very reactive. They're not proactive. So we're not doing, you don't turn the media, think about this a moment. When's the last time you've turned a television or radio show on or read something where somebody was being proactive? It just doesn't happen. People are very reactive, and that's what the news has become. Well, that's why the news is very, very negative, because we react to everything that's negative. Now, imagine a world where we could take some of this news and we could turn it a little bit to be A, proactive, number one, okay? B, solve some of the problems, and C, talk about some of the good things that are going on in the world. Well, guess what? We do that right here. This is Real Life. That's why I say, folks, it's not made up and we don't follow the media trends. So this is Real Life, and welcome back. We've got Colonel Jim Warshuk with us, 30-year career service intelligence officer, retired U.S. Air Force colonel. Again, he's held many positions in the White House, headquartered U.S. Central Command. And, you know, he just is a wealth of information. And I love to have him on. I have such respect for our military leaders. And as you know, I have them on frequently on our production here, because I just find that this is America's finest. And, I think our military leaders, they understand many of our vulnerabilities. So, you know, we were talking about Russia before the break, and I want to tell you something. I know you look at Russia, Colonel, as an adversary, as our country does. And I know, you know, again, Russia is in the political talking points of this general election in a big way. I understand all that. But here's the thing. I look at Russia a little differently, and Vladimir Putin and the whole setup over there. I don't think, you know, I listen to many politicians who say, I don't want to work with this guy. Oh, he's a bit of a putz. Or, you know, I hear these, you know, accusations and these claims. And see, I think they have it wrong. I don't think Russia needs to be an adversary. I don't look at Putin and say, oh, he's the big bad monster. Let's all, you know, create another, well, whatever it is. I mean, we're beyond a Cold War now, but although we have basically nil for communications with this guy, and what our current administration has done with him is incredible. What I would do, you know, the old sayings, in fact, Sun Tzu always says it in The Art of War, keep your enemies close by and work with them and, you know, make them comfortable with who you are. To me, I would bring some of these cats into the table, like a Vladimir Putin, and I would start to work with them on the levels that I could work with. I don't think by shutting these people off, we accomplish anything in this country. Am I wrong? Do you see it differently?
Well, I understand your rationale, and I am in agreement with your rationale, but I also have to look at someone like Putin, not for how we see him, but from the standpoint of how he sees us. And you have to remember, Vladimir Putin, who's in his 60s, grew up predominantly during the time of the Soviet Union, served in the KGB, and his mindset and his upbringing and his education and everything he has done in his life, he looks at the U.S. as an adversary. We have the ability to look at Russia and any other country and try to determine how can we deal with this country from our perspective. We don't paint every country as an adversary, but Putin actually looks at the U.S. as an adversary. He has no interest whatsoever in working with us from the standpoint of a partnership and getting along and an equal trade partner. He deals with everything from an event, from his position that he has got to win. Everything with him is a chess game, so to speak, not a equal partner getting along in the world with everybody else. Certainly he gets along with various countries around the world, but he's always looking at it from the standpoint of I have to get the upper hand, and this is his mindset. Many of the people who have studied Russia and have studied Putin, and, you know, we've got lots of folks like that who I've dealt with in my career, because that's part of what the military does, is to try to get into the mind of the leadership of who we may be adversaries with and understand them. Sun Tzu also said, know your enemy. So I take a different perspective on Putin. I don't think he is as open as many people think he wants to be. Certainly, just look at the things he has been doing in the last few years, moving into the Ukraine, into the Crimea, doubling down on his efforts in Syria to back al-Assad, and, you know, what are his anticipations for that part of the world. Okay. I see it as him eventually wanting to get a control of the oil in the Middle East.
Sure. Now, I understand.
My perspective is a little bit different on him.
All right. We're speaking with Colonel Jim Warshak again here, and again, the Colonel's perspective on a lot of things here this afternoon here. This is Real Life, folks. It's Malcolm Out Loud here. So, listen, all right. What you just described with Vladimir Putin, okay, I would say back to you, sir, I would argue back and say to you, what you just described, okay, I don't discredit any of that, but do you know what? Put the other shoe on, and I would say to you, the United States leadership, you could have just been talking about the United States leadership. The way you just described Putin, I got news for you. You could say that about the United States leadership, our own policies here. We do the same thing. We also think that we own it all. We also think, you know, adversarially in the same way that you are suggesting Vladimir Putin thinks. So I don't think we're any better than he has. I don't think we've conducted ourselves any better, Colonel. Am I wrong?
Well, I would say just one thing. we don't approach the world from the standpoint of control and conquering. We approach the world from the standpoint of stability.
Well, hold on. Now,
I think that's
that.
The biggest thing. We have never been a colonialist nation. We've never been a nation to go somewhere and conquer for the sake of gaining that territory
for ourselves.
Okay, all
right, but hold on. I hear you, brother. But hold on, Colonel. I mean, you say that, but here's the truth. The truth of it is, the way the world looks at the United States, and we've done a very bad job of messaging here, Colonel, but the way they see us around the world is exactly the opposite of what you just said.
I would say nowadays, in the last 8 or 10 years, yes, but I would say while a number of countries didn't particularly like us, they respected us, and a lot of countries always looked to the U.S. when there was a situation and they needed help, that the U.S. would be there. And I think that opinion and position of many countries around the world has certainly changed.
I agree with you 100%, and I'm glad you said more than 8 years, because I don't think this is just an Obama problem, although I think he has been quite hazardous to our health, but I also think this is a Bush problem, and it is a political problem. It's a Washington problem. I think both parties have done it, and you're 100% right with what you just said. I think there was a time when there was a lot of respect, and we could, you know, the peace through strength thing worked well for us for many years, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It certainly did.
No longer the case, brother. No longer the case.
No longer the case. You know, but I mean, it was always the U.S. If there was an earthquake in the world, or a famine, or a natural disaster, or
all right,
a small war, the U.S. would always come in. And granted, we would take sides, but most of the time, it was for the purpose of bringing about stability, to bring that country back to.
All right. We're speaking to Colonel Jim Warshak. All right, we're speaking to Colonel Jim Warshak again, and you're here in the United States Air Force, Colonel, 30 years. It's always good to get his perspective, and I enjoyed edging him on a little bit this afternoon and getting just a different look at things upside down here a little bit. You know, we got to solve some of this somehow, and that's my attempt here to do that. You know, we continue to look at the real issues here, folks, and I appreciate that, having the Colonel's perspective. So a lot of work we have to do ahead when it comes to all the things we're talking about. It's not just Russia, as he just so pointed out moments ago. North Korea's a problem. Iran's a problem. Iraq's a problem. We have a lot of problems around the world. It's time to do a little house cleaning is what I'll end the thought with you folks. I think house cleaning sometimes is a good thing when it comes to our political establishment and the leaders we elect to high office. Think about it. We'll pick this up again the next time out. It's Malcolm Aloud here. Remember, get involved. Get loud.